Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast on Monday. Join us in the Bias Buster Cluster, the anti-stelter shelter. It was another one of those Sundays on reliable sources. Brian Stelter was going to discuss the immigration coverage with the one and only Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. She is someone who is always using her life story, the refugee from Somalia, to be given sort of celebrity status. I mean, there are 435 members of the House of Representatives, and very few of those members of Congress get the amount of press attention that Ilhan Omar gets. She is now a sophomore in the House, but, you know, in her first term, she got an overwhelming amount of press attention. And now part of that, of course, was that she was going to come under attack from President Trump. What they kind of ignored was, why was President Trump attacking her? Well, in part, because she's on the radical left. Brian Stelter's just fine with that. Brian Stelter has these guests on his show, and he doesn't really ask them questions. I don't know if you noticed. Maybe you don't watch this program. I wouldn't blame you. But he asks Ilhan Omar about the coverage of immigration with a sentence like, "I'm curious to hear how you think immigration should be framed in the media." This is not a question that says, is the coverage fair? Is the coverage accurate? It's how should we frame it, Miss Radical Leftist? How should it be framed? Well, yeah, this is what news does now. It's certainly what CNN does. We're going to frame it very carefully. Well, Ilhan Omar jumped right to it in terms of framing it. She doesn't even want anybody describing immigration as illegal or legal. She literally said, when we ground the conversation with who is illegal, we allow for racist rhetoric. So just discussing illegal immigration in those terms, the obvious terms, is racist. And she also makes a big deal. She says it twice. That somehow everybody who's rushing to the border is fleeing unspeakable violence. Do we have any evidence for that? I'm saying, what percentage of people who are immigrating into America are fleeing unspeakable violence? What do we guess the number, the percentage would be on that? 10%? It ain't 100%. Violence and oppression, that's what they're escaping. I think it'd be just as obvious to say, people are coming to America for a better life. That's why Ilhan Omar came, because this country is supposed to be prosperous and peaceful. And you can't even question the idea whether a bunch of illegal immigration hurts prosperity or our civil peace. That would be racist. And Ilhan Omar, of course, is going to be pretty quick when she's discussing how to frame the story to underline what she calls the hysteria of the Republicans.
This conversation around the hysteria that is happening with the Republicans right now is centered around, you know, gaining political points. It's not about the safety of Americans. It's not about adhering to international law and allowing people to seek asylum. It's not about coming to the table and working with us in regards to immigration policy. Because if any of those things were true, you would hear hysteria from them in regards to the northern border. You would hear hysteria from them around, you know, folks who become undocumented because they overstay their visas. And so it shows you really that this conversation, it's about maligning and, you know, I think creating a torturous space that often becomes dangerous and violent for those that are the least fortunate in our immigration population.
This is the phrase that really got me. The least fortunate in our immigration population. So I guess if you're coming over illegally, that makes you the least fortunate. I assume Ilhan Omar who would say the most fortunate in our immigration population are Canadians or Melania Trump's parents. She literally in this interview starts talking about if the Republicans really hated immigration, they would be spreading hysteria about the northern border. Does she have any video of Canadians rushing over the border? Ay, ay, ay. Well, they've been talking about now taking some of the illegal immigrants at the border and putting them in northern states. So obviously, many of us would suggest, all right, let's take about 2,000 of those, put them in Ilhan Omar's district in Minnesota. We could put about 2,000 of them in AOC's district in New York City. Let's put about 2,000 in Rashida Tlaib's district in Michigan, just for starters, since they're so welcoming. I just can't get over the idea that someone with 2 years or three to about 2 years and 60 days in Congress would be this famous. She gets to go on Colbert. She's celebrated everywhere. This is what liberals do. She's a Muslim of color and a female. That's like the jackpot when you're a liberal. And it doesn't even matter what she says or what she does. Now, obviously, she knows that she can say things like, again, talking about immigration, talking about racism. She knows that they'll flock to her to listen to what she has to say, but they're not big on reporting criticism of her without saying it's all racist. I went into Nexus the other day to look at NPR, and there's like 90 segments mentioning Ilhan Omar. 90. Then you go in and you say, all right, I'm going to try these search terms. Ilhan Omar and Minette for her new husband. The one who was her consultant, whose campaign gave him hundreds of thousands of dollars. NPR is zero on that. You know, NPR isn't going to do stories about whether or not she married her brother to keep him in the country. These are stories that do not serve the Ilhan Omar story they want to tell. So on March 13, NPR's Morning Edition interviewed Ilhan Omar like she was some shadow secretary of state. The subject, one of the subjects was, she had introduced a bill about the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Now, Jamal Khashoggi was a columnist for the Washington Post, but the weirdness of that, it was he was almost always online, not in the paper. And almost everything he wrote was columns attacking the Saudis. Now, that's fair game if that's what you want, but it was a little more suspicious then when it came out that Jamal Khashoggi was cooperating very extensively with the government, the regime in Qatar. He was getting his columns cleared by the government there. So let's not get the idea that somehow Khashoggi was an independent journalist. That's not to say that anyone should say, well, he deserved to be chopped up, murdered and chopped up into pieces. That's horrific. But I think it's fair to try to say what is what is Ilhan Omar's geopolitics here? It's really quite clear that she and Rashida Tlaib really hate the Saudis, maybe not as much as they hate Israel. But, you know, there's really, again, no evaluation of where are these Muslim members of Congress coming from. You can't ask that. To ask those questions, if we're going to use Ilhan Omar, to ask those questions is an exercise in Islamophobia. So, you know, Omar, it was kind of funny. One of the questions that Steve Inskeep asked her, and of course they were all softballs, just like Steve Inskeep always did for Barack Obama. Has the U.S. been a force for good? What do you think she said? She kind of danced around it a little bit, and she said there have been no successes. And Inskeep also asked her about whether she can work with those awful members of Congress who didn't accept the certification of the election results. Not pro-riot Republicans, I would say they were. Pro-Trump, it's all a fraud, you know, Biden didn't really win Republicans. But it's that the whole idea, Ilhan Omar, please, can we talk about those other icky members of Congress? And no one's allowed to say you're an icky member of Congress, that you're a disgusting radical, because that would be racist and Islamophobic and sexist. Why not? There's also a story I saw on Twitter. I haven't read it yet, but there's a story by the AP with the headline, "Fallout from Riot Virus Leaves Toxic Mood on Capitol Hill." Prominently featured Ilhan Omar, saying it used to be so welcoming back in 2019. She's never part of the toxicity. She's always the one that's glorious, and anyone who opposes her is the toxicity. More in a minute.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
Now, as long as we're on the subject of Brian Stelter asking questions, well, they're not questions. They're basically facilitating statements. He moved on to the subject of the shootings in Georgia by this 21-year-old white man, clearly a disturbed individual. And, of course, this becomes an occasion, since six of the victims here were Asian American, it becomes a subject for the liberal media to tee up on, wow, America really hates people that aren't white. So on comes Connie Chung, the former anchor at pretty much every network except Fox. Right? CBS, she was anchoring with Dan Rather on CBS. There was some real anti-Asian hate from Dan Rather when they were working together. Check Bernie Goldberg on that one. ABC, CNN, MSNBC, whatever. NBC, I remember anchoring the NBC Nightly News. But Connie Chung is now there to give Brian Stelter exactly what he wants. His question, quote unquote, your assessment of the media coverage of anti-Asian violence in the United States. It's not a question. But she gave him the right answer, according to Stelter. She says, anti-Asian hate started the moment it came out of President Trump's mouth. So a 21-year-old nut shoots eight people dead, and the media rushed to blame it on Trump for saying China virus. Now, we know Trump was trolling when he used the words China virus because he knows that it upsets CNN and MSNBC and the Washington Post and the New York Times. And he knows that the conservatives and the Republicans will come around and say, well, where do you think the virus came from? And you really can't say Kung Flu. That causes genocide. It really is one of those things where the liberals are trolled. They're so easily trolled. They so easily overreact to it that Connie Chung's going to basically say a murder in Georgia can be immediately drawn to Trump. You can blame it on Trump. You know, the so-called independent fact checkers, you can't connect anything to Ilhan Omar. You can't connect anything to Biden. You couldn't say Biden got anyone killed, for heaven's sake. You can't call any Democrat a socialist unless they call themselves a socialist. Bernie Sanders, call him a socialist. No fact check. Call Senator John Ossoff a socialist and they all go, pants on fire. So Connie Chung tells Stelter, the media's been miserably late on anti-Asian hate because we're the minority that is invisible. Do you want to know when Asians were invisible in the media? When they were suing Yale for admissions, you know, the bias against the Asians. Yes, we know a lot of you got a high score, but we can't let you all in. That was a story the networks weren't interested in. That was a story, actually, I seem to recall, the New York Times covered it from the perspective of those Asian whiners. Well, obviously that's turned around. And then Stelter turned to the Washington Post reporter, Michelle Yee-Hee Lee, who heads a group called the Asian American Journalists Association. In our experience, these minority journalism organizations aren't really journalism organizations properly known. I mean, these are lobbying organizations. Some would smear them by suggesting they're a little like a media watchdog group, because these groups are always interested in how their minority is portrayed. And they're very interested in getting the most aggressive left-wing spin on their minority. The National Association of Black Journalists, the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, and now here the Asian American Journalists Association are all interested in wanting you to know America's a deeply racist and homophobic place. That's what they're lobbying for. And so Michelle Yee-Hee Lee tells Brian Stelter that the AAJA issued guidance when we saw newsworms were rushing, that's her word, rushing to describe the crime as not racially motivated because the suspect said so. Well, what the suspect says matters if you're a news person. You can guess about motives if you want. But what the criminal says why he did it should at least be something that's reported. When the director of the FBI says they saw no racial motivation, that should at least be reported. But what's really funny here is how these journalists are all like, well, we don't need proof. You just know it. Or as Michelle Lee said, when you're Asian, you know racism goes hand in hand with sexualization and sexual violence against Asian women. We just assume. Racism can be assumed. And they'll use these words like epidemic. There's an epidemic of anti-Asian hate. That's one of those terms I really dislike. Why don't we save? We're in a pandemic. Can we save words like epidemic for actual diseases and not for racism? It's an epidemic. And then they all have been rushing around to take the numbers from a group called Stop AAPI Hate. That's for Asian American Pacific Islander. Stop AAPI Hate says there have been 3,800 incidents of hate over the last few years. 68% of them are verbal, which is terrible. Anybody who walks up to an Asian American and says you're responsible for COVID is a moron. So yes, we're going to find some morons in the United States. 20% of those hate incidents were deliberate avoidance of Asian people. Now that, to me, there's a certain amount of that that's got to be psychological. Somebody was crossing the street. Maybe they needed to cross the street. Maybe they threw you a glare first and then they crossed the street. But this, to me, gets a little mixed up with grisly murders. That's a little different. So they said that 11% of these 3,800 incidents were assaults, but that would also include being spat on or coughed on. Once again, really stupid, but it ain't going to kill you. But this is the theme right now. And Mrs. Graham will say to me, now don't come off like you're using the murder to go off on some set of Twitter hot takes without denouncing the murder. Look, we should all denounce the murder. This was just senseless. It makes no sense. And it's tragic. I just hate the way it gets exploited immediately. We're going to smear it on Trump. We're going to smear it on the Republicans just because we can. And they're going to try to say that you can't criticize the Chinese. Nick Fondacaro has a blog up this morning at Newsbusters where Chuck Todd, after they talked about the words China virus, Chuck Todd was saying, politicians really need to be careful about their words. Well, again, you don't need to say the words China virus, but somehow the idea that being critical of communist China and the way that they're oppressing, say, the Uyghur Muslims. Have you heard Ilhan Omar on the Uyghur Muslims? I mean, I haven't paid enough attention to know the answer to that question. But I can tell you that the news media as a whole aren't exactly wildly upset about the oppression of the Muslims in China. They're much more upset that somebody walked across the street in the United States in an epidemic of deliberate avoidance. If we can't criticize the Chinese for the horrible things that the Chinese do, why even be manage to talk about China at all? This is where we are. So to follow along as we look at the sudden epidemic of hate in America again, you'll want to come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day, as many as you can handle. Join us again, like and download, and we'll talk to you again on Wednesday. Thanks for listening.